So this text is getting fairly subtle. Today's topic is really very beautiful. Last week we talked about that this knowledge is subjective. It has to go within. It's not external knowledge. It's not something the teacher can teach you. Teacher can guide you, but ultimately one has to find this knowledge within us. And once you discover this, then you are in supreme joy. But what is the goal of this knowledge? So the chapter number 31 talks about the other shore of samsara. Samsara means the world. This world is called samsara. Samsarati iti samsara. That which is constantly changing is this world. And we know the world is constantly changing. Everything is changing. We are changing. The society is changing. Trees, everything is growing, dying, you know, constant birth and death. What do we mean by other shore? This world is equated to an ocean or to a huge river. Suppose you are drowning in the ocean. Then you're told the shore is way on the other side, maybe a few miles. So you are swimming. And it's a constant struggle. So similarly, this world is equated to an ocean where we are drowning. Not physically drowning, but submerged in all these things that are coming at us. All the facts and the information from the eyes, the ears, the nose, the reading, the internet. All the joys and sorrows and suffering and problems. It's like I'm drowning and I'm looking for something, for a shore. So I'm here and then there is this world which is an ocean or which is a huge river in which I have to cross. But in the process of crossing, I'm drowning. But on the other shore, if we have get to that, is Om, the reality, the consciousness. You can call God, you can call Brahman. Can call the consciousness. So what is the other shore? This shore is where we are. We are drowning in this world. And if we cross this ocean, we reach that ultimate reality, which is the other shore. Now, how do we do that? So in the Gita, the Lord tells us that those who are drowning in this world, if they turn their mind and attention to me in love, then I lift them. So one process is devotion, love for God. But that alone is not enough. Yes, you can devote. But who is this God? What does he do? How can I reach him? So the knowledge is necessary. So love for God and right knowledge. And how do we get knowledge? From the scriptures. We were just talking about the Vedas or the Upanishads or the various scriptures, the Bible, the Guru Granth Sahib, all the Quran, all the scriptures are the source of knowledge. The prophets or gurus or teachers are the source of knowledge. So we have to acquire the knowledge from the teacher, either by reading the scriptures or reading a commentary. Like our Swami Chinmayananda has written so many beautiful books and commentaries. So reading them or listening to teachers. We have all these Swamis and teachers who come here practically every month. So listening to the teacher, contemplating upon it, and then meditating and applying this knowledge. So I listen, I think about it, and then I contemplate and then I apply it. And meditation, so knowledge, love, and then meditation. Meditation is a very powerful tool to reach the other shore of samsara, which is not somewhere in space or time, someplace I will reach in the future or in the someplace far away in heaven or somewhere. It is within. So meditation shows you that this goal is within. So it is not something outside, even though they describe the world as an ocean. But how do I get out of this ocean? By finding Lord within, and then the world cannot affect me. We'll talk about that. So they say, when does the mind become quiet? When I'm doing something that I really enjoy. As Swamiji in his book says, a poet who is composing or a musician who is singing or playing some instrument, or a scientist working in his laboratory, you know, writing a program or creating something new. When the mind is totally doing what it enjoys doing, a doctor seeing patients when he, if he really enjoys that, not as a burden, you know, a teacher teaching, when they are doing it with full attention and the mind is becomes quiet in that. Why? Because I enjoy doing what I'm doing. And this quiet mind is good. You know, when we sit for meditation and we are chanting the name of the Lord, or we are breathing, and the mind becomes quiet, but the mind is still there. I'm still in the mind. Yes, the mind is quiet, the mind is peaceful. But the idea is to sublimate the mind. What do we mean by sublimate? One is to destroy the mind. So the mind is not to be destroyed, the mind is to be sublimated. And sublimation means give the mind a higher ideal, and that is the Lord. So tell the mind that we need to discover our true nature. So the mind is given that higher, and in the process of finding the Lord, the mind becomes still, and the mind disappears. And actually we say the mind is the world. Why do we say that? Because when I'm in deep sleep, the mind does not exist. In deep sleep, there are no thoughts. When there are no thoughts, then for me, the world does not exist at that, in the deep sleep. As far as I'm concerned, the world is non-existent. Then I start dreaming. So in the dream, I create my own world where I am lost, you know, somewhere, and then I am trying to find my way, and then I'm in some strange city, and there some thief is chasing me, he has stolen my wallet, and I'm trying to run after. So all these things I create in my own mind, and that is the dream. And then when I wake up, then I experience this whole world of joys and sorrows with my eyes, with my ears, with my nose, tongue, skin, all that. So the mind is, the world is only experienced when the mind is active. If the mind is still in deep sleep, we do not experience the world. In dream we do, it is a self-created. In waking, it is God-created world. So the idea is to go from mind to no mind. And what is no mind? How do we do that? So as we said, you become a witness and you watch the thoughts and turn your attention away from the thoughts to the self. The more you get to that, ultimately you reach a state where the mind becomes still, and ultimately the mind disappears. And when we are in deep meditation, not only you have no experience of the mind, you don't even have an experience of your body. Even the body awareness, I'm sure, I don't know if you have experienced or not, but when the mind becomes quiet, and at that moment you not only don't have any thoughts, even the body awareness goes away. Have people had that experience? Well, it will, as you keep practicing. The more you, when your mind becomes very quiet, then even you try to feel your body, it's not there. But it takes practice. It will happen. It's just a matter of keep on doing it. I've been meditating for 22 years. So as you do this, and with this right knowledge, the mind becomes absent. And then even the body awareness goes away. It doesn't stay with me, but for moments I may just have that I am not, that this body, I don't know. I don't even feel my body. The mind, so it's just practice. It's just more and more practice and detachment. So why do we have all these problems? Because the ego. Ego is what? I and mine.
BMI.
Huh?
That's what ego is, right? BMI.
You know, the BMI is it's the perceiver, feeler, thinker is the
right.
Ego. The body, mind and intellect are my equipment, but I am a perceiver, feeler and thinker. That is the ego.
That's the ego.
That's the ego. And object, so the world is the world, this is the ego, the experiencer, and this is my equipment. So the perceiver, feeler, thinker is the ego. And the ego has all this fear, you know, I'll lose this, I want this. So as the book says, how do we conquer our fear? By earning more money, building a bigger house, putting security, alarms and guards and dogs, and then more friends and more contacts and more. And we think that somehow this will buy us security, buy us happiness, buy us. But the fear does not go away. Howard Hughes, the story, you know, he was a billionaire, but he lived in the penthouse of the building he owned, and he was even afraid to touch anything for contracting germs, to eat anything. And so ultimately he starved himself to death because he was afraid somebody will poison him in the food, even though his own staff was cooking. So what is the problem with the ego? I'm sorry. Yes, Howard Hughes was a billionaire. You can Google.
And his staff really should have taken him to the hospital.
Yeah, he actually starved himself to death.
They did ignore the problem.
He had billions, Howard Hughes. Just you can Google.
He made aircraft.
He owned the building, and he lived in the penthouse of the top floor of that building.
And he wouldn't buy many clothes and all that.
He wouldn't buy clothes. He wouldn't eat because he was so afraid of being poisoned.
He didn't want to spend money.
Yeah, he didn't want to spend money. He was mentally, you know. So
he was OCD really bad.
Right. Lot of things were wrong with him. So the ego with the body, I think that if I get more objects, I'll be happy, I'll get more things. With the mind, if I get more joys, if I get more friends, if I get people love me, people like me, I'll be happy. And with the intellect, if I get more knowledge, if I read more books. And so we keep on reading. Instead of picking a few and focusing on the depth of it, we just keep on collecting more information. So the ego loves to collect objects, collect people who love him or her, and collect more information. So when the ego ends and when the mind becomes quiet, then what you experience is the self, because it is the mind that is the obstacle between me, the BMI or the perceiver, feeler and thinker, and the Lord within, which is Om, the self, the consciousness. So the mind and the thoughts, as long as the mind is there, the thoughts are there, I cannot experience that inner self. So the mind has to be quietened and the mind has to be sublimated, given a higher goal, and ultimately the mind has to end. It does not mean that this person, a wise person, does not think, but his thinking is very different, and we'll come to that. How does a wise person live in the world? So first of all, there is no ego, no perceiver, feeler and thinker. He has no I-ness and my-ness. So I and mine does not exist for a wise person. Nothing belongs to me. Everything is the Lord. Everything in this universe is that. And even the I, the ego, the perceiver, feeler and thinker does not exist, because this person always lives with that consciousness, the Lord, the divinity. So, and it is not a temporary. See, you and me, maybe when our mind becomes quiet in meditation, you may experience moments of silence or moments of bliss. And then soon as we wake up and we start functioning in the world, then the problems come, and then we get caught in the world. But a wise person, a prophet maybe like Jesus or Buddha or Guru Nanak or Shankaracharya or Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, constantly live with that awareness that I am that totality, I am that conscious. It is not a temporary state, which for you and me could be. Okay, for a few moments when my mind is still, I experience that. But they constantly live in that. And they are awake. When somebody asked Buddha, are you a realized master? He said no. Are you a saint? He said no. Are you a prophet? He said no. So what are you? He says, I'm awake. Buddha said, I'm awake means I have woken up to this See, you and me are awake to this world. For us, this world is real. And this Lord within or God is something out there somewhere. Maybe there is a God, maybe not. Sometime maybe I'll meet him. The world is real. Yes, this table is real. This chair is real. This bird. But God, I'm not sure about. So we are awake to the world and asleep to God. We don't know about God. The wise person is awake to God and asleep to the world. For him, the world has no reality. It is all that one divinity alone, everything. So he does not distinguish that this and that. Everything is that. So for him, there is no world. God alone exists. But for you and me, the world has more importance. And God is somewhere there in the background. Maybe, you know, sometime in the future, I'll know him or meet him. And when the mind becomes still, then the condition is called objectless awareness. So it's not that the meditator is asleep. You know, in deep sleep, you are aware of nothing. In deep meditation, when the mind becomes completely still and there is no body awareness, then there is nothing to experience. Why? Because the consciousness alone is. And so this awareness that you have in meditation, where there is no body, there is no mind, there is nothing, a wise person constantly lives in that state of objectless awareness where he does not see any objects. Nothing, there are no objects, they are all me. So everything is me, so there is no objects. So that is called objectless awareness, and which you and me may experience in meditation when the mind is still and the body awareness is gone, but the wise person does not see any objects. For him, there is nothing. There is not you and this. Everything is me. Because in Vedanta, they say there are two things, aham and idam. Aham is I, idam is this. So I and this chair, this man, this clock, this fan, this. But for a wise person, everything is I. There is no this. This disappears. This, the word this disappears in his, does not mean that he, if he sees a lion, he's going to go and hug him. No, he knows. If he sees somebody coming with a gun, I don't know, wise person may do nothing. Or if he's, or he may close his door. Or if he sees a car coming at him, he's not going to say, oh, this is, everything is Brahman. He'll move on one side. But he does not distinguish between good and bad, joy and sorrow, success and failure. He goes beyond it. And what creates this plurality, this world of multiplicity? It is my thoughts. As long as I have thoughts, the world exists. As we said, when the thoughts still, then for such a person, there is no world. Now, how does this wise person deal with his body? You know, you and I are so concerned about our body. I should, yes, take care of the body, but spend so much time in beautifying the body, plastic surgery, and people do all kind of things, buying more clothes and jewelry and bigger house and everything to take care of the body. For a wise person, body is like a shadow. Now, what do we mean like a shadow? Like if I'm walking and my shadow is long because the sun is here and a car goes over the shadow, do I feel hurt? No, it's my shadow. Or somebody steps on it. They say, oh, you stepped on me. No, the shadow is there. People are walking. So for a wise person, his body is like a shadow. He says, it's not even me. Whatever happens to the body, let it happen. It's not happening to me. Just as anything can happen to my shadow, I am not hurt. So for a wise, this is a very powerful statement that my body is like a shadow. It has no real existence. Whatever happens to the body does not mean I don't take care of the body, but if things happen to the body, let them. Tomorrow, even if I have to drop the body, so what? It's a shadow. It has no real existence. So that I have to understand. And the mind also, for such an individual, does not exist. And when the mind does not exist, then there is no world. Yes, mind is, because mind is nothing but a flow of thoughts. When in meditation we quieten the mind and turn it inward, when the mind becomes still, then yes, the mind has no existence. So for a wise person, he is no longer persecuted by the mind. You and I, the mind is the one giving me stress, giving me problems. But as I get wiser in my meditation, then slowly the mind can no longer persecute. The mind can persecute if I give it reality. But if I say the mind is just a flow of thoughts, has no reality, and I'm just watching the mind, then slowly the mind becomes still and you reach a state of no mind. And the quietening of the mind and sublimating the mind, by mind is given a higher goal to know the self. So when the mind is given a higher goal and the mind is witnessed and the mind is stilled, then ultimately the person reaches a state of no mind and can go beyond the mind. And that is the goal of, so the mind is blocking me because it's giving me problems, it's giving me stress, but I watch the mind. And I give the mind a higher goal, a higher ideal. And in that silence of the meditation, I reach a state of no mind. And when the mind becomes quiet, then such a state is joy. It is bliss. Then the mind is no longer able to stress me because I'm not giving importance to my thoughts. Because the thoughts are there, but I'm just watching. Because I'm not the mind, I'm not the thoughts. Like the river example. If you are in the river, the Kern River, when it is full, it will pull you around along and drown you. But if you are watching the river, standing on the banks, then you can enjoy the flow of water. Wow, the river is so full, it is rained. So similarly, the mind can persecute us if we are in the mind. But if you can stand back and watch the mind as a witness, then the mind cannot persecute me because I am not the mind, I am the consciousness. So that understanding has to become very firm. That I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am not the intellect, I am the consciousness. And the body, mind and intellect is my equipment. We have said that again and again. It's the message, it has to become very strong. That I am not this body, I am not this individual. I have been given this name, Anil or Tony or Penny, and with male or female body and Indian, American, white, black, whatever my name is, my sex is, my race is, my nationality, none of those are real. They are all given to me. Was I born with this name? No, my parents gave me the name. This body is given to me by my parents. But is my equipment, like a car if you buy is given to, suppose somebody gives you a gift of a car, you drive it. So somebody gave me the gift of this body, my parents, so I use this body. And such an individual goes beyond death. Because death is only of the body, but I am not this body, so how am I going to die? Talking about death, this boy and his grandfather were walking on the street. And the grandfather sees his teacher far in the distance. So he tells the boy, hide, hide. He says, why? He says, you know, you bunked school. You didn't go to school today. And your teacher is coming. If she sees you, she'll get mad. So quickly hide. So boy tells the grandfather, you hide. He says, why should I hide? He said, because yesterday I told the teacher you had passed away. And today was your funeral. So he says, you hide. That's why I didn't go to school. So such an individual goes beyond death because he realizes that I am not this body. And he goes beyond in the mind and intellect. And then what is his experience or her experience? Oneness. There is one alone taking all these forms. So universal love, universal oneness. And that one has to develop. There should be no hatred. There should be no jealousy. There should be love for all. Yes, if somebody is bad, then let the God take care of him. Let his karmas will take care of him. If somebody is a criminal, the law will take care of him. But I should not have any hatred. And this experience of this joy is unbroken. As I said, it is constant. You and me, we have some brief experiences of joy when I get something good to eat, or when I get some pleasure, or when I acquire something. Maybe I get a new position. Sorry. I get a new position, or I get a job, or I become successful. Temporarily, I may experience some joy, but that joy is soon lost. Okay, I ate something, I got a joy, but then an hour later or 2 hours later, it's gone. I acquire a new position, the joy is for a while, and then all the problems of the position come. I buy a new house, there is joy, but then problems of the house come. I find a new spouse. How long does that joy last? How long does that joy last? Not very long. But a wise person's joy is unbroken because his or her joy does not depend on objects, emotions, and thoughts. The joy is within. And so go within and discover the inner joy, the inner peace. And then you do not need to depend on the world to give me more objects or give me more love or give me more this, more that, more that. I have found the joy within, and that is the goal of. And once you have done that, then you have gone beyond this world to the other shore. So the world is an ocean where I am drowning, and the shore is God or consciousness or reality. So through love for God, through right knowledge and through meditation, I go beyond the problems of this world to the other shore where God resides or where consciousness resides. And so I have to do all three. I have to love God. I have to have the right knowledge from the scriptures. I have to abide in that knowledge, bring it into my day-to-day dealings. And through meditation, you can experience that. So that is the essence of this teaching. I don't know if I was able to communicate this mind or no mind. Does anybody have any questions?
One thing is for sure that if you, even though I have not experienced it, many of us have not experienced it, but the bliss of the understanding that body is a shadow, mind is a shadow, that and joy, at least I think deep inside that there is no thing that can compare to the joy.
Yes.
Sure. I may not have succeeded, but it's just like looking at everything with equanimity, even looking at sun, if you are normally a setting sun or a rising sun, if you are in the body mind frame, then something is still there bothering you or you're thinking. But if you're not in that frame, then you just look at the sheer magic of nature and of things around you. And let's say somebody is sick, you are taking care of that person with full awareness without getting any deep agitation. You're even doing those things better than it. So without question, if that state is achieved, then that would, nothing else is worth achieving in this existence.
Yes, very true. Thank you. Very good. There's no greater joy than that. That's what all the masters and the prophets tell us. Nothing in the world can compare with the joy of enlightenment. In fact, in one scripture, they say that, say there is a young person, very beautiful or very handsome, perfect health, very rich, has all the objects they want, has no illness, no sorrows, no problems, nothing in the world. So that counts as one. Say you count one unit of joy. Then thousands of times that is the unit of joy experienced by people. There are seven heavens, right? So the first heaven is thousands of times more than this one individual who is perfect, has everything perfect, beautiful, rich, everything. No illness, no problems. So 1,000 times is that. Then the second heaven is 1,000 times that. Then the third heaven is, so 1,000, 1,000, 1,000, you keep multiplying 7 times is the billions. And that is nothing compared to the joy of that man of realization. Even the 7 heavens multiplied thousands of times for that man of wisdom, the joy that he or she experiences, none of the 7 heavens can compare with that. So that is the unit of joy which the realized master experiences. You understand what I'm saying, right? Each unit, each heaven, you multiply by thousand, then thousand, then thousands, multiple thousands.
Exponentially,
how many billions and billions. And all that joy together does not even compare with the joy of the man of enlightenment. Even that, a little bit, it does not. That's how much joy they experience within. That is the goal we all have to reach. And if keep on doing it, it doesn't have to be today or tomorrow, next month, next year, next. Keep on doing it. It will happen. But constant effort is required. You cannot sit back and wait for God to come and somehow give me joy or give me this. I have to put the effort. Constant love for God, constant study, and daily meditation. I mean, daily means that once in a while if you skip is okay, but generally regular steady meditation. If you can, about an hour, if you can. I mean, 20 or 30 minutes is good if you do that, but ultimately we should increase it to about an hour every day. Then alone the benefit will be there. So wake up a little bit earlier, and if you can increase it. 20 or 30 minutes is good. If you're doing, that's good. But try to go up to an hour. That should be the goal. Some sects in Hinduism, some groups, they meditate 2.5 hours because the day is 24 hours. So 1/10 of the waking time. So 2.4 hours. So 2.5 hours they meditate every day. My mother-in-law belongs to that group. Or Radha Swami, and they actually meditate 2.5 hours. Now she's old, she's not able to, she's about 87 or 88. But ever since I have been watching her, my in-laws have been living with us for about 30 years. Every morning she used to wake up at 3:30 and meditate till 6. I mean, I don't know if all the time, sometime you do may fall asleep and all, but she would try at least sit for 2.5 hours every day. Yeah, Radha Swami is in Punjab, yes. But they are told they have to meditate 2.5 hours every day. 1/10 of your day should be spent in meditation. Well, that's hard. And even for her, I don't think for these people, they really can stay 2.5 hours. They might sit, but even out of 2.5 hours, even if part of the time they are in silence and part of the time the mind is wandering, it's good. At least they're putting the effort. But 2.5 hours, I think, is excessive. But 1 hour, I would shoot for that. Definitely we should do that.
I went to a Zen group. It's different, but it's but what they do is they rotate from a sitting and then they do keening for half. So you're sitting for about half an hour and then keening for about 15 minutes.
What is keening?
Keening, it's like you're walking. It's like a walking. It's just
right.
Like slow walking. You go like, you're like right. This, then all of a sudden you're like this.
Okay, so awareness. Right.
It's, you know, you're still in that.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation.
Thich Nhat Hanh, right.
Meditation.
Yes.
They walk, watching every step.
Every step, yeah.
And out there sat saying, I don't know, we sat pretty long one time. Probably at least an hour.
Right. Or you can split it, half an hour in the morning, half an hour at night or whatever, but an hour every day. But yes, you can even make eating meditation, eating with full awareness, walking with full awareness.
Yeah, when you do the satsang and the yes. Zen group, we did some work, but everything was, we didn't, there was not a lot of talking. It was just
yes.
Very nice. And there, but there was, it wasn't complete silence, but there was just that whole.
Where was this?
I did this about probably 2 years ago. I went to one.
Yeah, satsang means the company of good. Sat yeah. means good, sang means company. Yeah, satsang also means company of the truth. So when you are in contact with the truth or with good people like this, this is satsang.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah.
This is satsang, where we are in
but
contact with
their
it.
Retreat as satsang.
Yes, satsang means company of the truth or company of the good, both.
And it was interesting because nobody really talked about what they did for a living. They talked about how long have you been in practice. It was very good. Wonderful. They were like, okay, this is what it's really about.
Yes. No, there are many such, you know,
yeah,
groups.
I know. It just
yes.
is something I have to do.
Right. Whatever works, but yes. Regular constant effort is required and constant learning. Never stop learning. If you say I have heard enough, I don't need to hear anymore, you can only say that if you are a realized master. If you are a realized master, you can say, oh, I've heard enough, I don't need to. But until you realize the truth, keep on listening, keep on studying, keep on practicing. If you are realized, if you are like Jesus, okay, then you don't need to study. If you are like Buddha or Guru Nanak, then you don't need to study, or you are like Shankaracharya. Until you reach that state, keep on studying, keep on listening to masters, keep on meditating. Once you are there, you don't need to meditate. But until you reach, you have to meditate.
I tried this during the day at work. We have a gym or something. I just went there to turn on my YouTube for a 15-minute yoga nidra, and I think I only heard like one line. And when I got up, it was like 45 minutes had gone.
Oh.
So it was not. I was not doing nidra, yoga nidra, and I actually fell asleep. But when you got up, it took like, felt like you have slept for like 6 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yes, when you're in that silence, yes, that's true. That's what they say, 1 hour of meditation is equal to 3 hours of sleep. 1 hour of meditation is equal to 3 hours of sleep. If you meditate an hour.
That these masters like Swami Chinmayananda and all, yeah, work only and sleep only 3-4 hours.
Yeah, he slept only 2 or 3 or 4 hours in 24. He was constantly working, either teaching or writing or traveling or talking to people. Hardly slept. 3-4 hours. Because they are in constant meditation. They don't have to sit and meditate. Their life is meditation. See, when I know I am that consciousness, then I am in that meditative mood all day, 24 hours. When somebody asked him, how long should I meditate? He said, 24 hours. He said, only 24 hours a day you should meditate. Does not mean that 24 hours you sit. 24 hours you are with the awareness, I am consciousness, I am not this body, that is meditation. So you and me, we need to sit while they are constantly in meditation. That is the difference.
Does it also mean that mundane talk that is going on with colleagues at work, like where is the Chevron stock right now? Maybe if we are careful about such talk, and trying to minimize such conversation would be taking that step towards the...
Yes, minimizing conversation, and even while the conversation is going on, be a witness. I am watching this conversation, even though I am participating, but I am watching the one who is talking, Prakash. I am watching.
That's very important.
Yeah, I am watching this person. Same thing when I am talking, I am watching the talker.
Myself,
yes. I am witnessing also my own talk. That I am talking, but I am witnessing myself talking. I am witnessing myself walking on the treadmill. I am witnessing myself doing the dishes. Or I am witnessing myself vacuuming. But I am watching the vacuumer. Or I am watching the one who is washing. So even dishwashing can become meditation. Even vacuuming can. Even conversation can become meditation if you become a witness. And you say, okay, I'm participating. There's nothing wrong. Okay, you know, you have to have friends. They're talking about stock. Okay, I'm also putting my 2 cents in. But I am not this. I am watching. So constantly develop a witness attitude where I'm constantly watching my mind. Not only in meditation, but throughout the day. Be aware of what the mind is doing.
So that 1 hour is a dedicated time. And
yes.
On top of that, that attitude which you carry from that 1 hour
should
spread over the
right, the 24 hours. So even when I'm talking, I am aware of the talker. Even when I am eating, I'm aware of the eater. Even when I am, as I said, vacuuming or washing dishes, I am watching this person wash the dishes. And with full attention, the person, you can pay attention to the soap and the hand and the dish, but I am none of those. So either you can do it with full awareness, and second is, I am not any of these. I am not washing. This body is, Penny is washing the dishes, but I am not Penny. I am watching Penny. That's, yes, I am the consciousness. So constantly develop this attitude of witness. Watch the thoughts. Watch the thoughts. Watch the mind.
Does it happen?
Yes.
Practicing, it does become a
yes. Habit? Yes. Not all the time, but a lot of times it happens to me that I am Not all the time, but yeah, that I am somehow distant. Or like you are in a party. You know, party is going on, but I am not part of it. Or in a group. Yes, it happens with practice. It can happen. It doesn't stay all the time, but moments come when suddenly you become aware of the of this individual. But you can practice that, for example, in doing mechanical activities, like on the treadmill or on the, you know, cross trainer, or while doing my dishes, or while whatever routine things that do not require much brain. Watch the person who is vacuuming. Watch the, like when I'm going for a walk, watch who is walking. I'm walking in the park and I'm watching the walker. So like that. So the more you can distance yourself from the mind, the more the mind loses its hold on you. Okay. We can practice. Let's do some little breathing. So let's put our hands above the eyebrows and breathe in and out through the left nostril 5 to 7 times. Slow in and out and pause in between inspiration and expiration, and expiration and inspiration, and pay attention to the pause. Now 5 to 7 times through the right nostril, slow and deep breaths. And pay attention to the gap. Now alternate in through the right, out through the left, in through the left, out through the right. Let's do that 5 or 7 times. Slow and deep. Put your hand down in your lap or on your knees Continue to take slow, deep breaths. And when thoughts arise, just witness the thoughts. I am not this mind. I am a witness of the mind. As the mind becomes still, you will experience the Lord's presence within, which is always with us. God is always with us, but we are not aware of His presence. Still the mind and know God.